Comics.
Movies.
Music.
Video games.
Technology.
Blu-ray.
Television.
This is the HHW LOD Podcast Network.
Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is
Abe. Hello.
Out Now is regularly a film podcast. Just Abe and I discussing new movies weekly. We generally discuss new trailers, box office results, and predictions, and callbacks to past films similar to the main film of the week. This week, we're doing something a little different. We did what I'm dubbing the Holiday Hodgepodge episode, wherein Abe and I got together with several of our regular guests on the show, and we discussed many of the movies that came out during this extended Thanksgiving holiday season. And we have movies like Life of Pi, Silver Linings Playbook, Rise of the Guardians, Red Dawn, just a whole bunch of movies came out, and so and because our guests are in various locations because of this whole holiday thing, we figured why not like just give everybody a chance to shed their thoughts on some of these movies. So that's
because what's better than spreading the holiday spirit during the holidays, right?
Not cheesy at all, and fair enough. That is kind of what we went for. So basically, this whole episode is going to be various recordings of us with our friends of the show that, and us talking about just the movie. Some of the movies we will talk about more than once, just because people saw the same movies. But, you know, it's nice to have different perspectives on different things, and that's kind of what we're offering up here. But,
You might hear Aaron talk about the same movie three times, you might hear me talk about it twice, but you know what? If you're a fan of the show, thanks for listening. You're going to hear more of us.
Yeah, for sure. And I do want to bring in, we do have one email that I wanted to bring up as a that's how we roll. Bring in some announcements here. So here's our one email. It's from Corbin. And it's a very special question because I think it's very appropriate. Here's what his email says. Now I have my most culturally relevant question. Did Abe cross Alex Cross? So Abe, did you cross Alex Cross?
It's a great question, Corbin. And no, I did not cross Alex Cross. So I'm safe. Tyler Perry is not looking for me.
You're safe for now from crossing Alex Cross, but we might cross Alex Cross in a future episode. You never know, Lee. But I wouldn't want to, never say never.
Never say never to crossing the cross.
Yeah, crossing Alex Cross is never a situation you want to, not think about. So.
Double negative? What?
Exactly. That's how you uncross Alex Cross, and you don't want to do that. You want to not cross Alex. I can keep going on the double the
yes,
Alex
this
Cross.
Is kidding. Getting,
it's yeah. I'm literally cross-eyed from talking about Alex Cross, so let's move on from that and just jump into our first recording here. I believe it's with myself and Mark Johnson. Okay, so this is one of our guest recordings. Here we go. I'm talking with Mark Johnson of Award Circuit. You just say hello, I guess.
I thought there was more of all my meetings that you wanted to go through. So yeah. Hi, everyone.
Yeah. So, Mark, you've seen a few of the films that have come out this past couple weeks. It's been a big, big movie season, and we're just going to kind of go over some of them and share our thoughts. So let's start with Life of Pi.
Sure.
The story you will find hard to believe.
And Life of Pi is, of course, the new film from director Ang Lee. Or is it Ang Lee? Either one. Shouldn't have to be confused on Ang Lee, but I'm going to be. So there we go. Anyway, it's story of survival, told in flashback, a man talking about his life. The biggest event, of course, is this giant shipwreck that happened, which left a boy stranded in the ocean on a lifeboat with a tiger. And, yeah, that's basic summation there, and I'm sure we're going to hear more about this film from others later on. But for now, Mark, what did you think of Life of Pi?
Oh, I absolutely loved it. It's a beautiful film. It's got fantastic visual effects and cinematography, along with, you know, spiritual themes that I think a lot of people are going to enjoy about it, especially more around the family type, family-oriented films of the year. I think it'll do well there. There are points that I might hold back my excitement on, especially the end, and I don't want to give any spoiler away, but there's a little bit of a deflation that I experienced by something that happens toward the end. But as far as the whole journey that this young man goes on across the ocean trying to survive, it's pretty intense and inspiring film.
Yeah, I'm very much in line with your thoughts there. I really enjoyed this film. I've seen it twice now just because I wanted to get my dad wanted to see it, so I went with him because I'm like, wow, I want to see Life of Pi again. And I think it's a very good movie. I really enjoyed it for many reasons, especially the visual levels. I think it's just a really great-looking movie for sure. And I can't get enough of, like, how well Ang Lee's able to make the story of this boy on this ocean make it look so interesting. It's just so visually arresting. Like, you have these shots of the ocean, which could be just like kid on water, but no, he does a lot of different things to make it just seem unique in many different ways, in many different settings, at night, daytime, afternoon, sunset. Like, he just has a way of creating a great kind of visual look for this movie as a whole. And yeah, I really like the use of effects and the 3D. Like, the 3D is the best I've seen since Hugo, where, I mean, it feels immersive and fitting for the story and not just, hey, we can make this another dimension. Like, it's like they Ang Lee shot in 3D and it works really well and it just fits.
Yeah, I rarely recommend seeing a film in 3D. But it's definitely the Hugo or maybe even Avatar of this year where you have to see it in 3D. It's just so much more beautiful, I would assume, in that format. That I didn't see it in the 2D regular format yet, but I just don't see a need to when you can experience it in the 3D format it was intended as.
Yeah, I agree for sure. And now, I didn't have a problem with the ending, really. I can say that there's less of an impact than other things that happen in the movie, but it's not something that I've really felt issue. I guess because we can't really talk about the ending.
Yeah. That's the hard thing, because you definitely don't want to talk about the ending, but there is one portion of it that maybe in a spoiler episode we can get into why I kind of just felt unsatisfied with a certain portion of it. But aside from it, I'm a big fan, and I think it's like we said, it's a beautiful film. This Suraj Sharma, I believe, is the actor's name who plays Pi. He does a fantastic job. You know, at times you have these long portions of just him and this tiger on a boat at sea, and you know, he does a great job, I think, carrying the film.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure. And I also really like Irfan Khan as the
older
Pi, and the way he. I mean, given that he's basically narrating the story, but you do cut back and forth to him occasionally, like, there's a lot of expression coming off of his face that I think's really well captured. I think he does a good job of being more than just the guy that's telling the story. I think he does a good job of bringing a level of emotion to it beyond just being able to witness Pi in the situation. You get to hear it from somewhat of an outside perspective of him reflecting on these thoughts, and I thought he was quite good.
I agree with that.
All right, so let's talk about the kind of potential awards consideration, I guess, since that's more your specialty. Where do you think where do you think Pi's headed down the line?
Well, I think Pi has an excellent chance this season to see a lot of award attention. As far as winning, I don't know that it's going to be toward the top of a lot of lists, but it's got excellent shots at a Best Picture nominee when we're talking Oscars. Ang Lee is one of the most respected directors in the business. And he does a fantastic job here. So I think he's still on the cusp, that 4, 5, 6, 7 spot. But right now I have him in there. I have him number 5 on my list. So I could easily see him getting in. I think the film is a shoe-in for visual effects and cinematography both. along with probably sound editing and mixing as well, because of those, you know, those giant storm scenes and the tiger on the boat with his, you know, growling and whatnot. So I think you could see a plethora of nominations for the film, most notably in the tech craft section, but also picture and director.
I wonder if if it gets best picture and director, I wonder if adapted screenplay comes with that, even though I think some people have issues with how it's adapted.
Yeah, adapted's going to be the hard part, because adapted is always a very crowded and difficult category to get into anyway. Mm-hmm. And especially when you look at other films like Argo and Lincoln, and possibly Les Mis, which, you know, just opened over the weekend in limited viewings. It's just a harder category to get into. So it's possible, you know, if people really like the film, but I think it stands a better chance in those craft tech categories in picture and director than it probably does in screenplay or any of the acting areas.
All right, cool. All right, so yeah, let's just kind of keep moving. Sure. things to talk about. So the next movie I want to talk about is Silver Linings Playbook.
Let me just break it down for you. The whole time you're rooting for this Hemingway guy to survive the war and to be with the woman that he loves.
It's 4 o'clock in the morning.
Can't somebody say, hey, let's have a good ending to the story? I can't apologize. You know what I will do? I will apologize on behalf of Ernest Hemingway, because that's who's to blame here.
Yeah, have Ernest Hemingway call us and apologize to us, too.
What are you going to do with yourself?
I'm getting trim, getting really fit for Nikki.
Patrick, she left. She's gone.
Doc, I have one incident. I come home from work. I see my wife in the shower. I pull the curtain back. So, yeah, I snapped.
Hey, Tiffany. This is Pat.
You look nice.
Thank you.
I'm not flirting with you.
I didn't think you were.
Look, I think you're really pretty, but I'm married, okay?
So am I.
No, that's confusing. He's dead. Wait, what's happening?
This is the new film from David O. Russell, starring Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence and Robert De Niro. And it follows Bradley Cooper after he's gotten out of a mental institution after an incident involving him catching his wife having an affair. And he goes back home and things happen from there. I think we're going to – well, there will be a trailer, and I'll be talking about this with other people anyway, so I don't need to keep going into descriptions. But anyway, what did you think of Silver Linings Playbook, Mark?
I was a big fan of Silver Linings Playbook. I think Bradley Cooper was absolutely fantastic, and as great as Jennifer Lawrence was as well, who she seems to be getting most of the praise right now, and she's considered by most to be the front runner for a lead actress at the time. I think it's really Bradley Cooper who carries the film. He's fantastic as a brooding, agitated man suffering with these afflictions, the bipolar disorder, and the film is, you know, it goes beyond being just your conventional romantic comedy. It's more than that. There's a lot more going on with the dysfunctional family angle between the father and son, which the father is played by Robert De Niro, who's also fantastic. You know, it's a very touching comedy, and I think it's in the same vein as maybe something like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest or As Good as It Gets, as far as taking, you know, putting a lighter spin on mental illnesses. It's a really good film, though.
Yeah, I agree. I really enjoy Silver Linings Playbook, and I think it's because it seems like such an accessible film. I think that's why I'm really into it, because I think it has, yeah, it could fall into the trappings of like romantic comedy, and in ways it does, but it feels well handled, and I like the fact that it is a dark comedy. It's like a dark comedy and a screwball comedy all put into one kind of thing, and it lives and dies on these performances, which I think are really strong. So all the three key ones, and even the supporting cast. Like, I mean,
sure.
But yeah, Bradley Cooper is very good here. Jennifer Lawrence is very good here. Robert De Niro is the best I've seen him in a while here. Mm-hmm. And Jackie Weaver is very good. Chris Tucker pops up, and I'm like, yeah, Chris Tucker's back apparently. He's in a really good movie. I enjoyed that. And yeah, it's this great mix of all these actors, and just, it's also just really funny, and it's funny while still managing to, you know, have a lot of dramatic elements. I think the biggest thing I take away is because David O. Russell, he previously did The Fighter, and a lot of people really love The Fighter, and I like The Fighter for specific reasons, but the issue I had with The Fighter which is not really too much to take the film down, but like the family stuff in the fighter with like the sisters, I thought was very cartoonish to me, and okay. It kind of brought me away from the more powerful story going on in the fighter, even though it's supposed to be both, you know, that and an entertaining movie. The sister aspect kind of brought me away from that. This feels like they took that aspect and made it into its own movie, and for whatever reason, it worked completely well for me here. Like, I was down with the tone completely. I was happy with what was being presented, how it was being presented, and the way it was able to mix the dramatic aspects and the comedic aspects. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, I agree.
But yeah, so Ryan's Playbook, which seems like I'd say, like, directorially, like, it seems less, I guess, kinetic visually than, like, his past films have. Like, it seems like this, it seems more like the actors are more of the drive of this film rather than the direction this time around. But although The Fighter, I could say the same with too. But even then, I could still feel like I sensed his camera more in that movie than I have in Silver Linings Playbook. But with that said, I just really enjoyed the movie still.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he did a great job with this. I wasn't as big a fan with The Fighter as I was this, I would say. Like, right now, I'd probably have Silver Linings in my top five for the year.
I certainly put it very high up there. I actually saw this again, too, last night. I saw it, like, a couple weeks ago, and then a friend of mine wanted to see it, so I'm like, yeah, let's go see Silver Linings Playbook again. But, and yeah, I still find it really, and it helped because the first time was of a press screening, which is, like, they were laughing, but this time was of, like, a major audience, and, like, you could really kind of feel what beats are being hit, like, the best, and it was nice. But okay, yeah. So Silver Linings, what are you thinking awards wise with this one? The actors.
This one's very similar to Life of Pi. Just flip it. As far as you know, it's looks like a lock almost for a Best Picture nomination. A director, he's basically right in that 4, 5, 6 range, same way that Ang Lee, where you can definitely see him getting in, or you can see him being just left out. This film though. It's going to be more heavy on the performance end, the screenplay end, most of the major categories, whereas, you know, Life of Pi was more of the technical side. I would expect at least a nomination for Jennifer Lawrence and probably Robert De Niro. Bradley Cooper, even though I mentioned I think he's the true star of the film, he's got a lot harder road to toe than the other two. It's just a crowded category this year for lead actor when you look at Daniel Day-Lewis for Lincoln, John Hawks for The Sessions, Joaquin Phoenix for The Master, Denzel Washington for Flight. There's just a lot of
competition. There's a lot of lead act, yeah.
Right. Somebody's going to get left out. And Cooper's one of those people that you could see, it just depends how much they love Silver Linings Playbook. If they love it, he's going to get in with it, I think. So. But yeah, this one mostly you're looking at picture, possibly director, possibly actor, definitely lead actress, probable supporting actor for Robert De Niro. Yeah, and then I would bet on a screenplay nomination.
Yeah, screenplay for sure.
Yeah,
and that'd be great to see De Niro get nominated. Like there's a lot of it seems like there's a lot of supporting actors going on as well too this year. But yeah, I think De Niro's very strong in this movie, and certainly you know he's Robert De Niro, so I don't think although I don't know how much stock that holds these days, but
that's the thing,
which is a shame to say. But although it could be more of like the "Hey, he's back" kind of thing,
right? That's most likely what you'll see if he gets the nomination is almost like a welcome back nomination. It would be his first in, I believe, since '91. I think was his last one with Cape Fear, was his last Oscar nomination.
Really?
So it's been something like 21 years or so since he last was nominated. So it would be a nice return to form for him in the film. And that'd be a good way of recognizing him. And it's a crowded category, but a crowded category with not a lot of heavy front runners. Like you have Tommy Lee Jones for Lincoln and Philip Seymour Hoffman for The Master. But after that, it gets real muddy with who could get in and who might just get left out. There's a lot of Alan Arkin for Argo. What's his name from Beasts of the Southern Wild? Now I'm going to forget his name.
Dwight Henry.
Yeah, Dwight Henry. You know, there's a lot of those kind of performances where you could see them forgetting about them or passing over them because maybe Alan Arkin, he just won one recently. But that's why I think De Niro has a pretty good chance because it's not a extremely loaded category. It's certainly not like lead actor where it's just so crowded.
Well, hopefully Taylor Lautner for Twilight doesn't get forgotten. But okay, so let's move on to our next film, which is. Let's talk about A Royal Affair, because you've seen this one. I haven't seen this one, but what's A Royal Affair about?
If you can get the king to visit your bedchamber on the first evening, you'll be perceived as a great success. I was an innocent,
married simply for political union.
Jeg, kong Christian den 7. erklærer hermed krig mod lort.
To a man who cared little for me.
Drikke, jeg kan godt lide luder med store bryster. Jeg kan godt lide at slås.
Og hvad er der galt i det?
Hvorfor var det lige mig, der skulle have den kedelige gås, hva? Gør hende sjov. Jeg vil gerne have en sjov dronning.
As Struensee's influence grew, his grip on the king tightened.
Jeg tror, du kan blive en fantastisk kong, Christian.
But while he gave Christian back his mind, what he gave to me was more powerful and far more dangerous.
A royal affair takes place in the Age of Enlightenment in Denmark. It's Denmark's official entry this year into the Oscar foreign language race. And it tells the story of princess who then becomes queen, Caroline Mathilde, I believe is how you say that. I'm awful with pronunciations. But Alicia Vikander, she's also going to be seen in Anna Karenina coming up. She plays the queen. She does a terrific job. She gets forced into marriage with this king of Denmark who's a total jackass. And actually, they believe he suffers from mental disorders as well. But for the most part, he's this immature guy who just likes to fool around with other women and pay her no attention. In the meantime, she develops this relationship with the king's personal physician, Struensee, Dr. Struensee, played by Mads Mikkelsen.
Oh, Mads Mikkelsen. Okay.
Yeah, who most people probably know from Casino Royale.
Right.
So, yeah, they begin this kind of love affair, and it's really interesting because the king really loves this doctor as a mentor and friend, and the queen loves him as a lover. In between this whole love affair going on, it goes to this other level where now the queen and doctor are using the king to help run this country and bring Denmark out of the Stone Ages, basically, and take over what the king has let the country kind of slide to the rule of the cabinet. So, it's a really interesting movie. And the thing is, for me, with period pieces like this, I'm not a big fan of them. Mm-hmm. And I gotta say, I really, really liked this movie. So it's the genre I usually least enjoy, but I was pretty enthralled with the story here.
That's good to hear. I've heard a lot of good things about it. Royal. I mean, yeah, because it's that season, so I'm obviously going to hear a lot of good things about these kind of movies. But
right, yeah.
But yeah, no, there's some things I like in it. They're going, not having seen, there's some things I like about, that I know about it. So if I get a chance, I might be able to go check it out. But it's the official foreign entry, right? So probably.
Right, yeah. So yeah, you can look for it in the foreign language race, but you know, crazy things happen in that field all the time. So I wouldn't call it a lock at this point. Probably Amour and The Untouchables are probably the only two you would feel safe calling locks in that field yet. But this is probably the next closest thing. Costume design is another thing that I could see it getting in. Foreign films don't really cross over too much in other categories. Mm-hmm. I think voters kind of feel that they have that category set aside to recognize them, which is kind of silly, but it happens almost yearly where you don't really see them across the board in other categories.
I think Ang Lee was probably the last person to really bring a film like that crossed over a lot with Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Yeah, Crouching Tiger was big. Pan's Labyrinth was big.
Oh, Pan's Labyrinth. Yeah, I forgot about Pan's Labyrinth. Yeah. Pan's Labyrinth, yeah.
Children of – or City of God was the one that got a director nom as well.
Which, oh, my God, I love City of God so much.
and just last year, A Separation was also nominated for screenplay. So,
that was a big thing, happens. Too.
It happens. It's just not very common for them to spill over into too many categories. And really, I don't expect too much as far as Oscars for this film other than – you know, foreign, and then possibly a nomination in costumes is probably what you're looking at. But even there, it's going to have, you know, some competition getting into, especially being foreign, it kind of handicaps it. But the big thing, I think, with this movie is to look for Alicia Vikander, and I know I'm probably saying her name wrong, just saying it phonetically. It's Alicia Vikander. She's fantastic, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see more from her, knowing especially that she's also in Anna Karenina. I'm sure we're going to be seeing more from her.
All right, great. Now let's talk about Lincoln really quick. We all talked about Lincoln last week, but you were not. I mean, and we wanted to get you on that podcast, that just didn't
work out.
But what were your thoughts on Lincoln?
Well, Lincoln's one of the big films of the year, of course. Steven Spielberg's newest. For me, it's the best I've seen so far this year. I was an enormous fan of it, both with what Spielberg did and then, of course, the performances from top to bottom. You know, and most notably, Daniel Day-Lewis, who's just absolutely mesmerizing as the president. You kind of just forget you're watching Daniel Day-Lewis, and you just get taken into this this time period and the way that they show the passing of the 13th Amendment.
Yes.
God, I'm so bad with history. Yeah, the 13th Amendment. It was just fantastic and entertaining to see how not much seems to have changed from back then to today, as far as all the lobbying and whatnot.
Certainly in the way it's portrayed. Yeah.
Right. And the James Spader character and Tommy Lee Jones characters were highly entertaining and I was a very, very big fan of the film.
Yeah, I really love that Tommy Lee Jones performance quite a bit. I mean, Daniel Day-Lewis is almost like, of course he's good. Like, it's beyond. It's like, let's move on to everybody else because Daniel Day-Lewis is just that good. But I really like the Tommy Lee Jones performance quite a bit. And yeah, I did like the movie a lot overall. So this one, you think it's going to be a front runner Oscar scene?
Yeah, I mean, since my initial predictions in April, I've had this in the number one spot. I haven't moved it since. I think its biggest threat is probably going to be Les Mis, even though most people are saying Argo at the moment. I feel it's going to probably be between those two, with Argo as the third spot. But yeah, Lincoln's going to be a huge player at Oscar. Whether it wins or not will be interesting. We still have to see Les Mis, which, like we mentioned earlier, just is now starting to be seen. But you can expect Lincoln to possibly lead with nominations from top to bottom: text, acting, directing, screenplay, picture. It's going to be a major player.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think that's kind of because we're going to have so many other guests participating in this. I guess we're just going to have to wrap it up. So, Marco, where can more people find your work?
I write for the awardcircuit.com. Right now, you can view my reviews and news stories there. And I'm MJ Award Circuit at Twitter.
All right, great. Thanks for your thoughts on these several films. I know you're going to go see Rise of the Guardians later today. I hope you enjoy that. I had thoughts on it. I think it's fine. It's fine for families, for sure.
Yeah, I'll have to listen to hear what you guys thought about that one.
Yeah, for sure. So, Abe.
Yes, Aaron?
It was fun listening to myself talk about movies with Mark Johnson, but I think it'd be even more fun listening to myself talk with you and Mark Hoban and Adam Gentry about a few more movies.
I actually think that it's going to be more fun for me listening to myself too sometimes. Sometimes.
All right, so yeah, that's going to take us into our next recording, which features friends of the show Mark Hoban and Adam Gentry.
Happy holidays.
Abe, hey, say ho.
Hey ho.
There you are.
Hello.
Okay, we are joined right now by writer for Things I Know About the Movies, Adam Gentry.
What's up, friends?
And, of course, Fast Film Reviews, Mark Hoban.
Hello, everyone.
And we're going to talk about a couple movies here. We're doing kind of a hodgepodge of reviews, a holiday hodgepodge, I'll call it. And we're just kind of talking about all the various movies that have come out during this Thanksgiving week, since there seem to be a lot of them. And so the first movie that three of us are going to talk about is going to be Silver Linings Playbook. And this is the new David O. Russell film with Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence. And I'm just going to let it go here. So I'm just going to start off. Mark, what did you think of Silver Linings Playbook?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was kind of at first in the film, I thought the script's sort of odd mix of mental illness and humor was a little off-putting. But as the narrative kind of wore on and the story took root, I really was engaged with these personalities. And I really think that Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence are giving probably two of the best performances of their emerging careers. I thought they were both really good. And they're supported by a really great supporting cast, Robert De Niro, Jackie Weaver, Chris Tucker, Julia Stiles, and a few others. And it has this really kind of engaging interactions between the two stars. And then it all kind of manages to have a conclusion that manages to combine the Philadelphia Eagles football team with a ballroom dance competition. I just thought it was really – I liked the way it ended. So I thought it was a really winning movie.
Adam?
You know, it's the strangest kind of feel-good movie. It really is. I mean, I totally agree with Mark about Bradley Cooper in particular. I think it's probably his best performance because, I mean, you kind of get the sense with Bradley Cooper sometimes that he's, oh, man, he's getting all these movies, but how good is the guy really? Because, I mean, it's hard to forget the fact that the first time you ever really saw him in anything was in The Hangover. And as much as I love The Hangover, you know, let's not pretend that, you know, it was Academy Award-winning, you know, acting.
I've seen Bradley Cooper in a few things before The Hangover.
Well, for me, it was the first time that I ever remembered seeing Bradley Cooper. So whether or not I'd seen him or not, you know, could be. But, I mean, he's really fantastic in the movie. And, yeah, it's a strange little mix, kind of like Mark said, as far as its portrayal of mental illness. But I really liked the sensitivity with which it treated the story. Because, I mean, really, we're hearing the other side of the story. And that normally you always hear from a friend or from somebody that you know about, oh, well, so-and-so went crazy, and now we're scared of them, and we stay away from them. And this was great because it was looking at that other side of the story as far as you know, kind of what he was dealing with, what his family was dealing with, that they're trying to keep him on the right path. But, yeah, it's a really winning movie. It's a lot of fun. Jennifer Lawrence is unbelievably attractive in this film. And I will say I wasn't completely a fan of the way of where the ending took their interaction and their relationship. I thought it was a little bit not completely authentic, but that said, I mean, I'm the romantic in me is still very glad that it went that way, but I felt like it was a little forced here and there. So I really enjoyed the film.
Yeah, I was on board with this movie all the way through. I really enjoyed what was going on with it. I've described it as this before, but I really thought of it as kind of a dark screwball comedy, like kind of modernized in a way. It just the way these characters interact, the humor, the kind of the dramatic bits that are going on, the way everything came together, I really enjoyed. I really liked the performances a lot. Cooper and Lawrence, very good in this movie. Robert De Niro also doing like his best work in some time. I really love the what the story was and how it handled. I was in with the tone from the outset. I can see how it could be just the way it kind of sets itself. But it kind of just goes when it starts. It just kind of gets going already. It feels like it almost feels like you missed like the first 5 minutes of the movie the way it begins. But like I like that. I like how you just jump into the story and you just follow this character, Bradley Cooper's character, and just the way it all plays out.
Did they ever tell you what he's suffering from?
Yeah, you find out he's suffering. He's undiagnosed bipolar. You learn that.
Oh, okay. And what about Jennifer Lawrence?
She's got her own issues, and I mean,
okay.
I don't need to spoil everything about the movie, but yeah.
I no worries. No, I'm just curious because she herself is unwell, right?
Yeah, to an extent.
Okay,
they're both broken people.
There you go.
Ah,
and they're trying to right themselves in various ways. And
does the movie feel real per se? Like this is how a real situation would unfold with kind of this.
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, there are bits that are fairly unbelievable that you know people wouldn't really behave that way, but at the same time. You know, it's got a nice kind of refreshing look at mental illness because it's something that a lot of people deal with in a lot of ways. I mean, even there are certain characters in the film that they're not diagnosed with anything, but you really get the sense of, oh, so this person's got their own issues too. They act like, you know, everybody thinks that they're fine, but, oh, this person has the same issues and in a different circumstance. This person could have easily ended up in the same, you know, same place as the Bradley Cooper character.
I would say that it's unreal in the sense that the movie needs to have some sort of plot to conform to just so it has somewhere to go. But at the same time, there's these argument scenes between like Bradley Cooper and his parents and just like, it's particularly between him and Robert De Niro. It just, there's emotion there that I really get caught up in. I think I think David Russell has a good handle on that kind of a knack for that kind of vernacular when people really argue opposed to saying like, things that feel very scripted, they feel like honest arguments that have bits of comedy and bits of drama, and you can kind of feel that in these performances and in how it's kind of written.
But like Bradley Cooper, he's playing this character where, you know, he says whatever pops into his head, and sometimes he says things that are really kind of smug, and there's some of these scenes are in the trailer. And, you know, it's meant to be funny, but at the same time, he's acting this way because of his sickness. So it's sort of like, we're meant to laugh at what he says, but at the same time, it's sort of like, yeah, but he is kind of a character that isn't behaving like a normal person would. He doesn't know how to bite his tongue. I mean, he, like,
yeah,
you know, he says and whatever.
It's hard to feel like when you're watching it, you keep wanting to think, dude, just calm down. It's okay.
Right,
but
right.
Then you think about, well, he can't calm down.
Right, and he has a trigger that sets him off, and you know, you're kind of like, really? Would that really? Would someone start acting like that just because of that? You know, so sometimes you're not really sure if this is sort of these sitcom conventions or if this is really people who suffer. I assume people who do suffer from mental illness probably do have these triggers that mm-hmm. set them off. You know,
I meant to ask you, Adam, yesterday because we saw this movie together. Adam and I saw this movie together, but all three of you, I can ask. Did you guys like The Fighter? I forget the.
I did like The Fighter. Yes,
I loved it.
Like The Fighter, don't love The Fighter. I feel like with David O. Russell, I feel like there's always something in his movie that's a little bit off. I think the film of his that I like the most, I think it's the most consistent, would be Three Kings, because that's a pretty fantastic movie. But I think, like, for example, with The Fighter, Christian Bale is awesome.
Yes, but absolutely, I feel like agree.
Kind of elbows and knees sticking out in odd places, like odd musical cues that go into odd sequences of Caucasian female violence in gangs.
Adam, see, that's exactly what I'm talking about, because I feel I had issues with The Fighter based on the way that you have this, and I talked about this with Mark Johnson already, so I'm not sure how this is going to be ordered, but like the way that the sisters kind of play into it feels cartoonish at times.
Yeah, very much.
In comparison to, you know, the dramatic story being told. And yes, there's a lot of fun to be had with Christian Bale's character. At the same time, he's, you know, a drug user, and like there's things about it that I don't think match up tonally. And what I think David O. Russell did with this movie is he took that element out of The Fighter and made it a whole movie, and it works really well here. So.
Ah, I see. I love those, like, seven sisters arguing. Did you know Conan O'Brien's sister is actually one of those sisters?
Yes, I was.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was fun, but I can see your point.
In my opinion about David O. Russell is I really feel like he's coming into his own, and he's, like, on a career-defining high right now. To me, personally, Silver Linings Playbook and The Fighter are my two favorite David O. Russell films. I liked Three Kings fine, but these I like more. And then I've said this before, but most people probably listening won't realize this. I absolutely hate I Heart Huckabees. It's actually one of my worst films of all time. So I'm amazed that, like, I love David O. Russell now, but that film I did not care for.
I'm not a fan of I Heart Huckabees. I really like Mark Wahlberg in I Heart Huckabees. I think he's the only one that seems to know what's going on in that movie.
Never seen it, fortunately.
Yeah, it's awful.
I don't remember too much about it. I absolutely adore her. So.
No, well, then that's probably partially why I find it so offensive, is that it's such a shocking waste of talent. Actually, I Heart Huckabees had a really problematic and well-documented production, and there are even YouTube videos of David O. Russell and Lily Tomlin. Yeah, where they didn't get along, and you don't know that when you're watching the film, but when I see those scenes, I can kind of think, yeah, I don't think he knew what he was doing, and now he does, but in this film, I think the film was too existential, and he didn't have a clear idea of what he wanted to do, and I think it's seen in these scenes with the actors that they're getting frustrated, like, I don't understand this film.
That's why I think, like, Mark Wahlberg seems to be surprisingly the only one that gets what's going on in that movie.
Right.
He
actually comes across fairly well in the film.
And I think it shows that's why, you know, he's done three movies with them. He did Three Kings first, and they did Huckabees, and they did The Fighter. I feel like they have a good working relationship. I'm curious as to, I know Mark Wahlberg turned down the role of Bradley Cooper's role in Silver Linings Playbook to do another movie. Oh, wow. I would be curious to know what that would be like if he was in this movie. All right. Chris Tucker's in this movie also.
Yeah.
And he's really good.
I thought he was fine, but it's almost like someone told him, and maybe you like this about the performance, but like someone told him, don't be yourself, just really reel it in. So I didn't really understand why he was cast, but yeah, he was fine.
You're putting it to a point of anyone could have played this role again. That's almost what you're saying. And the fact he did play it, and he played it fine.
And there's a great actor named Anupam Kher that plays Dr. Patel. Oh my gosh!
He was erupting in theaters based on his character.
What?
Yes,
he was awesome.
I'm just saying, best actor.
Forget Daniel Day-Lewis, everybody. This is all about this man.
Big fan of...
Who does Chris Tucker play in the film?
He plays a friend of Bradley Cooper's who he met in the mental institution. Okay. But what's funny about his character is that he arrives in the film, and every time he seems to have escaped from the mental institution. You know?
Oh, okay.
So every time he arrives again on screen, you're not sure whether you're supposed to be like, oh, so he either he got a cab and headed over, or he escaped again. Like it's, it's just
what
this kind
De Niro
of...
Call him? Like, De Niro calls him like the...
Jailhouse lawyer.
The jailhouse lawyer, yeah.
And like, it's like, one thing I forget to mention all the time, every time I talk about this movie, it's very sports heavy. Like, I mean, it's not like you don't need to know sports to watch this movie, but it's very much about, like, Robert De Niro is in love with the Philadelphia Eagles. Like, everybody in this town is in love with the Eagles. And, like, it depends heavily on, like, watching the signs and giving the good juju out for the Eagles and everything. And that plays a big part in the movie. It's just something I just don't tend to mention, it seems, but... I did like these aspects of it. It's just it creates a nice universe for these characters to exist in. Even like what's his name, John Ortiz, like a good character actor. I like John Ortiz a lot, and his
he's one of these guys. He's a chameleon. He looks different in every film.
Yeah, it's just it brings a lot.
He has a great little monologue about Metallica.
Yeah,
I like the relationship between him and his wife too,
Julia Stiles. Yeah,
Julia Stiles. Yeah, that was cute and.
And I gotta say too, I mean, it's again, I know I mentioned it on our last podcast. One thing I think is really cool about characters like the Bradley Cooper character, and whatnot, is that he is able to get away with saying exactly what he thinks about people. Like he thinks some of the same things that you know a quote unquote normal person would think. The difference is that he actually says it, and people say, "Well, what are you doing? I told you not to say it like 5 minutes ago."
Right.
You can't tell me. He's like, "I'm gonna say it. What are you doing?" And I think we all, in some way, kind of wish that we had that kind of levity in our own lives to just
no filter
people on stuff. Yeah.
I have to say, they keep mentioning Bradley Cooper's character in the movie. They tell him that he's lost a lot of weight. Like, it seems like there's something significantly happened to his kind of physical appearance in this movie that we never get to see. For Bradley Cooper, I feel like he... In other movies, he's played kind of a domineering male type character, like an alpha male type character, and it seemed I never felt unconvinced that he was playing the person he was playing in this movie, which I found to be surprising I like Bradley Cooper, but it's not like he doesn't jump to me as like an actor that I need to go see in movies right away, despite the fact that I think he was like sexiest man in the world or something 1 year, regardless.
People magazine or something like that.
But I mean, he's able to. Despite the fact that, yes, he is a very handsome man, he's very attractive, he's able to strip that away and play this character and make it feel right. He convincingly plays this person that has this disorder and doesn't just seem like he's an actor that we know for being a good-looking guy who's trying to make his way in this realm of film. So,
and I gotta say, too, ironically enough, he goes into this little monologue with his parents, and you see this in the trailer, so it's not a spoiler, where he outlines the entire plot of A Farewell to Arms and goes into real heavy detail about the ending and everything. And it just so happens that the one book that I'm actually reading right now is A Farewell to Arms.
This movie was made for you, Adam.
So spoilers for Hemingway, is that what you're saying?
Spoilers for Ernest Hemingway, if you haven't read it yet.
All right, so let's wrap this one up since we're trying to keep these concise, and that has not happened at all. Mark, you know our scale. Where would you put this on our scale of when you should go and see Silver Linings Playbook?
What's after IMAX?
Theater.
It's
funny how I don't say the scale when you're like, what's on the scale?
You can just edit that. I'll say theater.
Okay. Adam?
I'm fine with theater.
Yeah, I say theater as well, and yeah, for sure.
Abe, what do you think?
You know, I'd say theater. It was a strong movie, strong performances.
All right, so yeah, that's Silver Linings Playbook that's playing now. I think it expands wider in the coming weeks as well, and I hope that gets seen more by people. Okay, so Adam, we're going to talk about The Life of Pi next. I know you have not seen this film yet, so I'm going to let you gracefully exit the podcast. Where can more people find your work?
People can find more of my stuff at my blog, Things I Know About the Movie, located at everythingyoualwayswantedtoknow.blogspot.com and at twitter.com/iltwinanarchist.
All right, great. Thank you, Adam, for joining us to talk about Silver Linings Playbook.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And, we'll see you next time.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye. Let's talk about Life of Pi. This is the new film from Ang Lee. I mean, that probably explained this already, so whatever. Or a trailer has probably played it by this point. So, yeah, let's just jump into it. Mark, what did you think of Life of Pi?
I also loved Life of Pi. I think it is a really fascinating drama that will entertain adults but still delight children. And I just like the movie's sort of sense of wonder and the breathtaking visuals that they use to tell the story about a teen that gets shipwrecked. And I don't know how much we want to say about the story, but on the surface, it's just sort of this story about a teen from India set adrift on a boat with a tiger. And that's sort of that's the main portion of the story. But I actually found that it was a lot deeper than that, and it kind of explores themes of faith and perseverance, and he has this kind of interesting worldview where he's sort of mixed up a bunch of different religions and kind of like taken a little bit from all three religions that normally wouldn't really combine because they kind of are mutually exclusive. But still, he's an interesting character, and he goes on this journey, and I just liked what happened to the character a lot. And then it's all complemented by these gorgeous visuals. It's stunning, really. And it's also in 3D, which I actually did not see it in 3D, but by all accounts, everyone says go see it in 3D. So I will support that. So, yeah, I really enjoyed the film a lot.
Abraham Lincoln Mua, you've read all of that. You've read the book. Correct.
Yeah, I have read the book. Yes.
And how did you like the movie, and how do you think it stacked up compared to the book?
That's a great question, because I was going to start out the review by saying that I was going to become a book snob and say that I enjoyed the book more. I think because I don't like when people really do that either, because I don't think it's fair to the book or the film as separate entities. But I felt as though there was more emotion in the book, where you could realize how long he's been thinking about whatever thoughts about faith and whatever else. I thought that the movie did a pretty good job. Visually speaking, yeah, the movie looks fantastic. I mean, I was reminded of, there's a lot of rich colors and there's a lot of very serene shots, which are very delicate and beautiful to look at, and they make you really ponder along with the character of the film. But on the overall, it was, I thought it was okay. I don't know if I was incredibly caught up with the emotion of it, because I kind of felt a little bit detached. I think that when they circle back from Pi's teen life to interweave some of the older Pi and younger Pi, I feel as though it kind of takes away a little bit, even though both are telling the same story to expand more on it. So overall, I thought it was okay, and I thought the 3D was not as crazy good as Hugo. I still like Hugo way more than any 3D movie I've ever seen, but I thought it was rather decent.
I mean, I'll just start there then, because I wouldn't say it's better than Hugo, just because I think with Hugo, the 3D, it literally informs the movie. Like, it applies to the narrative of why they're using 3D, which I don't think... There aren't going to be many movies that do that. But with that said, the way Life of Pi utilizes it, and how Ang Lee, who shot in 3D, how he makes it work in this movie, especially when you get to the scenes that are at sea, I think it's completely absorbing. I saw this movie twice in 3D, and I think I was just caught up in the way he uses the camera and the way he pushes you into this, like the whole shipwreck sequence, or just scenes that take place on the water, and how you're right there on the moment, just the way he uses perspective, or even like that, the flying fish scene, which literally changes the aspect ratio of the screen to
absolutely
to utilize the 3D to full effect. I was really taken in by what it did. And, I mean, with the visuals itself, yeah, the movie looks fantastic. But I will say I
didn't see it in 3D, and I still thought that the movie was gorgeous. And I was totally there. There's a scene where he's on an island with the meerkats,
right?
And just seeing them move across the island, I don't know. I just really loved it.
Yeah,
and the flying fish and the jellyfish and the whale, and I mean, there's a lot of CGI. But I actually I'm the type that does not like that sort of thing usually if it's too much. But this, I feel like it wasn't as obvious. Or I thought the animals were really well animated.
I think they're well suited to the film and the story that's being told. I wouldn't say it's necessarily a fantastical film, but there's certainly it rubs against the edge of fantasy to an extent, and just in an appropriate way, and how it brings these animals to life, I think is very effective. I like the. I mean, yeah, there's certainly a lot of CG being used, but it feels appropriate to the film that I'm watching, and like the use of the tiger and how. Mm-hmm. how it interacts with Pi's character. I think it's just a very good effect. Like, if you're going to have a tiger that needs to share the screen with a boy for a majority of the film, it damn well better look good. And I think Yankee's able to pull that off really well. I think the people they use for visual effect, I believe it's the same people that were responsible for the effects of Chronicles of Narnia, among other visual effects heavy films. So those are, it's that team of people that, and there's a lot of animals in those films,
right?
And I think it works really well here. And I mean, aside from that, I just really like this movie. I mean, I've presumably talked about this already with Mark Johnson, but I do really like this movie. I think I don't seem to have as much of a problem with the bookending elements as a lot of people seem to. I really enjoy Irfan Khan's narration in this film, and just the way when it does cut back to him, along with was it Suraj Shah, the actor that plays Pi?
The actor?
The
young Pi?
The young Pi, yeah. It's you know, you see him for the...
The one on the boat?
Yes, the one on the boat. You see him for a majority of the movie, for sure. Right. He does a very good job for being, you know, literally a new actor. But Irfan Khan, you get to see emotion on his face as he's telling the story. And I was really caught up with, like, what he was putting out there. Like, it's a fine supporting performance, I think, and what...
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with that.
Yeah, and
some people have a problem.
A lot of people think the beginning's kind of clunky and the end is kind of...
The beginning, like, where he's describing his name?
It starts, just how it gets to... Yeah. It feels like... I'm honestly not that sure, because I really liked how it sets up.
I liked the movie in general. It just, I wasn't super moved by it.
See, I think that beginning part is really great, because it kind of gets you really into this Pi character. You see how he's teased about his name, and he's a real intelligent kid, and, you know, there's this one part where his dad. Okay, so he's raised Hindu, and then he's exposed to Christianity and Islam, and his father is even like almost not religious, and he's like, oh well, what about science and practicality? And he goes into this little thing, and then he goes, I want to be baptized.
Yeah,
he's really a cute kid. I mean, so you already love this guy right from the start. So they've laid the groundwork for someone you really want to follow. So when he does go through this journey, I was really like, I really liked his character more than I did, for example, the lead in Hugo, the little boy. I wasn't as taken with that child, and I was very taken with the child, and then as he got to be a teen, and then also as an adult. I liked him throughout his entire journey quite a bit. I mean,
yeah, that's not to say that I don't like the character's storyline, but I did like that, and I especially liked when he's wondering to himself what are the reasons why he's been shipwrecked, you know, and then the bountiful goods that he's received and what that all means. I mean, I found that to be very intriguing as well, and I liked that aspect about it. But just it just wasn't one of those goosebump hair-raising moments. At any particular time, I think the most of where it could have been was where he finds land, on the coast. So I think that's the only thing. And I think that I'm just really meshing it with my feelings about the book.
I have so many questions I want to ask you.
Even during scenes when there are other animals on the boat, and one by one they're not on the boat anymore, you weren't into that as much?
No. Because the way that it's described elsewhere, it's more affecting, and when I saw that, it's a streamlined version of it, and so I just didn't.
Well, it's a movie, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, which is why I can't fault it, and I'm not going to say like, oh yeah, it's terrible. It didn't live up to the book. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that I think that
a lot of people I've read in lots and lots of reviews that have said that this book is unfilmable. Now, so I haven't read the book, but I think if it is unfilmable, then Ang Lee did a really good job.
He did a great job. Yeah.
It's actually a fairly simple tale. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't seem unfilmable to me, or at least what I saw. But
I'd be curious to know why people considered it unfilmable, because I've heard the same thing, and maybe because the animals involved and how you have to kind of
20 years ago, yes, I would say it's unfilmable, because how do you represent
which is,
that?
Which is why this movie's been in development for a while, right, for like a good right, 10 right. years.
But these days, but somehow I got the feeling that the reason why people were saying it was unfilmable were more existentialist thoughts and things that were going through.
That makes me wonder if people have seen film before, because there's a lot of films from way long times ago that deal with heavier themes and more. I mean, the Coen brothers have made a career out of doing this kind of thing.
Exactly.
I mean,
so it doesn't seem.
I watched Barton Fink last night. If that was the book first, I would consider that to be unfilmable.
Right.
But and again, also, I mean, if Cloud Atlas is a movie, then The Life of Pi can be a movie. I mean,
It's
and I know the structure of that book, and that seems way more unfilmable, quote unquote, than Life of Pi would seem. But whatever. Anything else about Life of Pi?
The film Castaway is kind of relatively about the same thing, and I felt more. I guess I felt his plight more in Castaway than I did in Life of Pi. But that's not to say Life of Pi is not a good movie.
I've taken culture anthropology classes, which really people hate Castaway in that kind of profession. They really don't like Castaway because they're in love with Robinson Crusoe and how that what's there to take away from that as opposed to Castaway. I think they think Castaway gives the wrong message out, but. That's it.
I don't get – how does it give the wrong message?
That's a whole different discussion, honestly. It's a funny rationale that people –
And how do they feel about Robinson Crusoe?
They love Robinson Crusoe in the way it depicts a man's isolation. But
Robinson Crusoe is a reference for Castaway, too.
And I feel like Robert Zemeckis took away the wrong kind of messages from – that to make Castle. Regardless, what I've been describing Life of Pi is like Castaway meets Big Fish. That's kind of the
because
there's a there's a hint of fantastical mix of the fact that you're on this stowaway.
Another thing too about Life of Pi, it really reminded me a lot of The Black Stallion and this relationship that the boy has with this horse and it's sort of that with the tiger. And, I mean, the relationship wasn't very friendly. I mean, I guess the boy and the horse ultimately did become friends, and that does not happen in Life of Pi. But the horse was wild and crazy at first. They didn't get along. And I also love the nature, the scenes of nature and stuff between the boy and the island and then the same thing in Life of Pi. I just saw a lot of similarities between that. I mean, I love The Black Stallion. It's one of my favorite films involving an animal, so any film that reminds me of that film is going to be like really good for me.
All right, so let's get to our rating then for Life of Pi, and same scale, IMAX theater, Dollar Theater, HBO TV, just kind of forget about it. Mark Hubman, where would you put Life of Pi on that scale?
I'd give it IMAX. I really loved it.
I'd give it theater because I think people will take away different things from it, but it's visually stunning.
Yeah, I would give it an IMAX too because I really like the idea of people seeing this on a big screen in 3D and checking it out, and I'm very happy that it. I mean, this is a weird show, so I'm going to talk about the box office. Box office wise, this movie did very good, better than people were expecting to. It came in like I guess it's weird with the Thanksgiving schedule. It technically came in fifth place, but it made $30 million in its opening.
Opening
5 days, and that's double that's double what Hugo made last year. And, which is a very comparable movie, I think, because of it is a PG movie that families can go and see, but it certainly has themes that are more adult conscious than child conscious. Even though it has like hey animals and animation and 3D and stuff, it's a movie that plays to families for sure. But I think it's a movie that will resonate with more of an older audience.
Weird because I never felt like that it was a kids movie to begin with. I didn't think it was gonna be a family movie either because I thought that it would be. The serious tone of it and kind of like the things that are the themes that are in it, I felt those was like more adult themed, and so I was kind of surprised when I walked into the theater and there were a good number of children there with their families.
Because it's rated PG.
Yeah, and I guess the idea of an animated tiger is appealing.
Well, I sort of said this in the beginning of my review, but I think adults and children will appreciate it on different levels.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
Kids might just take it at face value.
Same with, like, the Muppets, for example.
Right. There's jokes that, yeah, they would never get. And there's sort of themes that are present in this film that children might not understand, but they'll still appreciate the rousing adventure story. And, you know, I actually appreciate it as on that level as well. But then there's also this other sort of symbolic things that you can bring to it.
And, I mean, with that, as much as, you know, certain movies make money that you think, like, oh, that's not good, why is that making so much? Don't underestimate audiences and how much they want to see a good movie. Like,
that's true.
That is a takeaway. That does happen year after year. You see movies that, like, you'd expect not to necessarily do well if you're trying to market it, and they do run away with getting money made. Like, it happens, and I'm happy that Life of Pi is one of them. Before we end this, there's two movies I want you to talk about, because we have not talked about them on the show at all. The first one is Flight. You saw Flight.
Oh, yeah.
How you feeling, man? Look like you pulled some kind of move up there, man. You saved a lot of lives.
We are in a dive.
I have no control on my side.
We got
to everybody in great position.
The way you landed that plane was nothing short of a miracle.
Listen to me, trim us nose down.
Plane fell apart at 30,000 feet.
We're gonna roll it.
What do you mean, roll it?
Ready? Here we go.
Come on, Liz, baby girl. There is all kinds of crazy news people out here. You're a rock star, man. You will never pay for another drink as long as you live.
Captain Whitaker is a real American hero.
This is Hugh Lang. He's an attorney from Chicago. Why do we need a lawyer?
You don't remember having your blood drawn down at the crash?
You had alcohol in your system. That could be life in prison.
What did you think of Flight with Denzel Washington?
See, I really loved Flight. Right. I thought... What's that?
That's my Denzel. All right, okay.
You know who does a great Denzel? Oh, no, that's actually Will Smith. Never mind.
No, yeah, he does a decent Denzel, too. What's his?
Jay Farrow
on SNL?
On SNL, yeah.
All right.
Oh, he does do Denzel, yeah. And it's good because you don't think that Denzel is one of those actors that you could imitate, and then you realize, oh, yeah, you can, and he's doing it.
I do one-second impressions. All right, okay, that's my Den. That's good.
I can see that.
My Bryan Cranston in Breaking Bad. Jesse! That's my Bryan Cranston. But anyway, Mark,
that was powerful.
I thought that Flight was a really good drama about alcoholism, and, you know, it's a problem that you might even think is kind of cliched or even passé in these modern times. But I thought that John Gatiss, who's the screenwriter, he made the issue really compelling. And I really, it's one of these things where you keep wanting to scream at the character, like, why are you doing that? Just stop. And I guess that's, you know, when you're an alcoholic, it's just you really can't stop, or you're just so – it's such a crippling thing that you just – you're it's almost – I mean, it is an addiction, I guess. So
it's
– and I thought the movie really did portray that, and I also thought the movie was kind of had an interesting take on things. I mean, there was almost a part where they almost say that, like, he needs to take drugs so that he's lucid for this thing that he needs to do.
They say that. They don't almost say it. They say that.
They really say it. So I just
actions
thought,
actually do happen, too.
So it was, I mean, like, it was surprising, like, some of the stuff. It wasn't your typical, like, you know, this is bad. And I liked Denzel Washington. I mean, you know, when I thought he's at the top of his game. So if you need, yeah. I mean, more than that, I mean, he's a great actor. He's at the top of his game. I thought he was really magnetic. And then, you know, he has this relationship with another woman. And I thought that was kind of interesting. There was a lot going on. And I really.
Did you think
that
relationship was kind of superfluous to the storyline?
I did.
I mean, it's not.
It doesn't really go anywhere per se.
It's just.
You saw it too, Abe.
I did see it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so the movie is layers, and there is that layer to his character that helps you sort of understand him through her. There's this relationship he has with John Goodman. He's being represented by Don Cheadle. And so you see, like, these different facets of his character through these other people. And then plus, it's got this really incredible plane crash in the beginning of the the film. I don't think the movie is not an action film. So I think if you're going in expecting a lot of action and wham bam kind of stuff, you might be disappointed in that respect. I'm just trying to anticipate you, Aaron. But if you take it as just an introspective drama, I think it's pretty effective. I really loved it.
Now, okay, so I had no problem with the fact that the movie takes its turn away from being about the actual plane crash necessarily and turns into an addiction story, but I feel like I've seen better addiction movies, a lot of them, that deal with the same issues, and this movie doesn't hit it the way it could given the caliber of actors and directors and people involved in making this movie. Leaving Las Vegas is an easy example of that, or even like Trainspotting. But I mean, the way it sets up Denzel's character, who I do think is very good in this movie, but when we're in this movie, he's already divorced, he already has nobody, and so there's not a lot of places for this movie to go. And so I already feel like it's overlong in how it presents him doing basically a repeat of the same thing over and over again. He finds somebody, he talks to them, they get angry at him for whatever reason, he goes back home, he starts drinking again. I feel like I've saw that scene multiple times in this movie. And what bugs me is that they're well-acted scenes. And like they're putting in the effort and they're doing this, but just, I don't like the way the story structures all that. And I really dislike the ending of this movie overall, too. By the time you get to this ending, after you've seen Denzel go back and forth between, I'm going to drink again, I'm not, and I get the idea of, I'm yelling at this character because I don't want him to keep drinking, that's horrible, God, addiction, it's angry. But you get to the ending, and you get to this, 11th hour decision that needs to be made, and it just feels like everything's supposed to fall into place, and I'm supposed to accept that because of someone finally realizing something, and I couldn't accept that. So I just couldn't, that pushed me over the edge of not liking the movie, even though
Really?
Yeah, I was into a lot of it.
Yeah, Aaron didn't like it.
No,
I didn't know that.
Abe, what did you think of the movie?
You know, I thought that it was, I thought I was going in for something else, and then I thought it was something, I got something else, and I was still hoping that it was something else. I actually thought it was going to be a courtroom legal drama, not a substance abuse issue movie, and I'm not going to say that I didn't like it, but it was something I didn't expect, and I think that acting performances were very strong, very good. I don't think that I think if you were given a choice of actors, Denzel would probably be the only one that could really make you feel this way. I don't really think that anybody else might be able to be like, oh yeah, well, I've got this huge problem and I'm going to be a dick to everybody, but also really nice and smooth.
It's because he's very charismatic, I'll give you
that. Yeah, I was like, maybe George Clooney? But George Clooney doesn't give off, a vibe of...
No, I wouldn't say so. He's too smooth for that. But, Robert Zemeckis and Tom Hanks have a pretty good career together. We probably could have made it work and stuff.
That's true, yeah. But, I mean, overall, I because it went to where I didn't expect it to go, and then it does have, this weird... The ending is almost like a... I'm not talking about a courtroom ending. I'm talking about, the actual...
Ending
how
film.
The movie film... Yeah, the film ends. It kind of gives me, a He Got Game vibe. And it's not to say that Denzel is in both, and that's why I'm reminded, but it's just because the ending of He Got Game is just so weird. Denzel throws a basketball, and then that's the end of it. It's like, where did that come from? Or, why is he, just shooting hoops in a prison jumpyard, and just, I don't understand that. And for this one, it was just kind of, I can see where all the lies build up to a certain point, but I just, and that one was okay, but then later, when... there's, a few 10 minutes left. It's kind of like a say anything thing where even say anything didn't matter.
I like how you brought say anything back.
It's real, man.
It's real.
Yeah, overall, I thought it was a strong performance. I don't know if it was one of the movies that is the best of the year.
I guess it just really, I don't know, for whatever reason, it just really grabbed a hold of my interest, and I was really interested in, his relationship with this woman. Are they going to be able to represent? How are they going to represent him? I thought it was sort of an interesting take. I mean, it even kind of sort of suggests that even the drinking helps him land the plane. I'm not sure if they were saying that or not. I'm sure they weren't, because that would be kind of. But it was like he was sort of this badass. I mean, he was like, you're the only one that could land the plane. And he was constantly drinking.
He's a functioning alcoholic, yeah.
He's a functioning alcoholic. Even the people on the plane, there seem to be aware that he's a drunk. And the guy, there's this really good discussion where he's at a, I think he's at a funeral, and he's talking to one of the flight attendants, and he's like, "Well, you're gonna back me up." And she, and I just love this actress. She's, I don't even know who she is, but
I don't know her name either. But
she was really like
Tamara Tooney, and she was in Death Proof, I believe. Actually,
okay, thank you. And I thought that she, I just liked her read on the character and how he's like, "You're gonna back me up," and she's like, "I was there that day. I talked to the other flight attendant," and I just. I don't know. I just liked the way that every scene in that film, right. I liked.
Yeah, so just, I mean, the performances are fantastic. And again, even the co-pilot, when he talks to the co-pilot, you're not even sure where the co-pilot is going with it. And all of a sudden, the co-pilot's like, "Dude, don't worry about it. Like, nobody could have done it but you."
I have issues with how the tone played with, like, the co-pilot and John Goodman's character, who comes in late again.
I agree with John Goodman's character, because, I mean, there's just awkward scenes where he just pops up, and it's just, it kind of takes away from the tone of what they're trying to establish. And, I mean, they're the most comical scenes, but at the same time, it comes at
times when I don't think there's going to be some comedy.
Exactly. I agree with that. Which is like, look, there's a very serious issue that's going to come up right now. If you don't, like, shape up, we are screwed! And it's like, blazing like Aerosmith or whatever, Rolling Stones.
It's playing the movie's soundtrack consists of every song you've ever heard that involves addiction. That's the soundtrack of this
movie. Yeah, and then all of a sudden I'm like, haha, this is the way we're gonna do it. It's like, I don't know if this is the best way, but at the same time, again, that's why it's like, it's great performances, but it's not the story that I was expecting. If it was all about, like, dude, you're drunk, and we were trying to land this plane, and you know what? Here's all the legal stuff, and Don Cheadle had a larger role to play. I would be like, wow, this is a compelling, like, story about addiction and about legal courtroom dramas, which I can really get into, but it wasn't that as much.
And by the way, Don Cheadle killed the Tox Report, just to...
Yeah, he did. You know what? I had three.
I know you said that he keeps saying it. I mean, I didn't notice that.
He said it like every other
time. He says it like every time he's
but
there.
But it didn't bother me. It didn't.
Yeah, I know. It's almost like the lens flares. You know.
That's exactly what I was saying.
It just didn't bother me. I mean.
He killed the toxic.
But I have a question. So there is some talk about there a possibility of Denzel Washington being nominated for Best Actor.
Yeah.
Would that shock you?
No, it wouldn't. And it wouldn't.
Would it bother you?
No, it wouldn't bother me. I think he's good in this movie. And again, I don't think I said this the first time. I wanted to like this movie. I went in really excited to see this movie. It's a new Denzel Washington movie with Robert Zemeckis back behind the camera of a live stream movie, and it has this amazing plane crash sequence in it, and then it gets to
Your review for this film, I mean, surprised me probably more than anything I've seen this year.
All right, okay, so let's move on to it, because that's been out for a while. So yeah. People have seen Flight, good for you, or whatever. It's making money, actually. It's another one that's like, you know, an adult drama that's making money.
But I actually was for...
Just say Denzel sells.
Yeah.
All right, last movie, Mark, before we cut you off, before we let you go. There's a little movie called Twilight Breaking Dawn.
You're going to make me talk about this?
I'm not going to make you talk about this. I'm asking you if you'd like to share your thoughts on Twilight before we end this part of the discussion.
I mean, talking about this is kind of ridiculous because, you know, who cares what I think?
Well,
I mean,
let's break it down. So you've seen – you wanted to see –
I've seen them all.
Because you wanted, you wanted to complete the Twilight saga.
Right. So, I mean, I do have a valid you know, reason to talk because I have seen them all. But I mean, this movie is for the fans. It's not for people who are looking for drama or storytelling or acting. They just want to see their characters that they know and love and see the film the story come to a close. And it does come to a close. And you know, there's a climactic battle and that's sort of, I mean, that's interesting, I suppose, but it's kind of silly. There's a lot of posing.
Would you say Michael Sheen's good in the movie?
Yeah. Michael Sheen was good. He's like one of the – he was in Tron also, and I really liked him in that. And sort of the same things that I liked him in Tron. No, but he adds
– I agree with you, Mark. I liked him in Tron.
Yeah.
I like Tron Legacy more than others.
Yeah. Oh, I love Tron Legacy.
I like Tron Legacy. I just thought that his character was like just very ephemeral.
It's so weird because of the rules of that universe. It's hard to understand how certain people can act when you're, you know, a computer program. But let's move past Tron Legacy for a
bit. Yeah.
Actually, I will say Michael Sheen does give a performance, and he's the leader of this
Volturi.
Yeah, these like group of vampires that kind of enforce the rules, and he speaks with like a self-importance, and there's like one part where he lets out this like delighted high-pitched squeal that like has more personality than everything that was said in the entire production.
Oh,
so like I kind of perked up at that moment, and then I kind of like, oh, then I fell back to like the state of lethargic passivity that I had, because most of this film, it's they're posing, and it's made up of, you know, models that preen for the camera, and you know, they're like mannequins. I mean, they look good, you know, but there's really not a whole lot of stuff there.
Well, okay, yeah. So I have not yet seen the Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn Part 2 or
but, you know,
TTS BP 2, but I did tweet Red Dawn would have been better if it had a giggling Michael Sheen in it. So
yeah, if you saw Breaking Dawn Part 1 and you enjoyed it, then you will enjoy this too. So it's a logical continuation of that film, and it does end.
Does the chemistry between K Stu and Rob Pat sizzle?
You know, I will say that K Stu is a little bit more animated in this film.
Because she's a vampire now, right?
Yeah.
Spoilers.
Exactly. I wasn't sure, like, that's a spoiler.
Spoilers.
She has a little bit more fire to her. So
she had red eyes?
She had, like, vampire eyes, whatever you call
it. No, she puts on contacts, though, because she sees her dad and she puts on contacts to kind of hide.
Spoilers.
All right, well,
because I'm going into this, I'm like, I want to know what happens with Charlie. That's his dad, right?
Charlie.
I think that's his dad.
You know a lot about this film series.
Well, he's the character I like in those movies, because he has a cop of a mustache, and he's really nice to his daughter.
You know, it's funny, like every once in a while there'll be like a person that's like over 30 in the film, and they like stick out like a sore thumb, and
like Lee Pace.
There's one part
like Lincoln's Lee Pace is in that movie, I believe, and he.
Oh yeah, yeah. But
are you talking about the audience members, Mark?
What's that?
Are you talking about audience members, like some guy who's in his mid-30s?
No, he means in the film.
In the film.
Okay, all right. That is kind of creepy.
I'm talking about Bella's father. He kind of sticks out as older, and Michael Sheen. There, I mean, they put so much makeup on him. It kind of hides like how much older he is. But there's one part, you know, that the camera's right in his face, and you can see like the. High definition, the white pancake makeup. I mean, they're all pale, but they're obviously using more makeup on Michael Sheen than they had to use on, you know, Kristen Stewart.
Well, I'd like to think his character puts makeup on himself.
Right. Yeah.
You gotta stay away from the sun.
He's really good, actually. I did. If I can say one nice thing about the film, I did enjoy his performance.
Well, did you find the action compelling in the final battle?
No, I didn't. Okay. It's just mayhem. It's just a bunch of decapitations and mayhem. And you'll just watch.
Well, can you? How about this? Because these movies have been very consistent box office wise. Obviously, do you find it respectable that they did not choose to convert these movies to 3D?
Yeah.
They could, I mean, because that's free money.
I'm surprised they didn't.
I mean, I think there's something to be said for the fact that they decided to, because they certainly had the option to.
Why didn't they shoot them in 3D?
I think because they had a legitimate respect for the film that they were making, regardless of how good you may think it is. I think they actually cared about not doing that just for the sake of getting that extra money, which seems like a blasphemous statement to say, but I think they cared enough about not going that route.
And maybe the audience members will go see it more since it's not as expensive. That 3D would.
I mean, I think the hype is so built up that it doesn't matter. Like it would be seen nonetheless, and it would be, if anything, making it obscene amount of money more than it already has. But
yeah, and actually, the word is audiences love it. It's a huge hit, and
that's what I've been hearing as well. Like it is higher rated than other Twilight movies, and it does have a higher cinema score than other Twilight movies.
Right. And I take cinema score seriously. I think that a lot of times that is sort of what the masses are thinking about a film. So you know, it got an A, I think, didn't it?
Yeah. Yes, it did.
It got an A, just like Lincoln got an A as well. So,
I'd like to think people will go and see both of those on the same day just because they're really having a good time at the theater.
And there is a baby. There is a baby in the film. Yeah,
Rigatoni Mushrooms or whatever her name is.
It's a completely fabricated entity. It's not
Do
even
you know why they did that? Is it because the baby actually does stuff that needs they need?
Right,
they
right.
Need
oh, there's a part. There's a part where she's holding the baby, and the baby is making expressions like an adult. I mean, it's like they're talking, and it's making little. It's furrowing its brow, and it's looking around. And I mean, I was laughing. That's
recall.
It's really ridiculous.
It sounds like I don't even want to keep going with this. All right, so all right.
Go ahead. Okay. You might enjoy it.
Well, I'm gonna. The women I work with, they're gonna go see it, so I'm gonna be with them when that happens. Probably.
Oh, so you're Saren? Sure.
See,
all right, let's move on from this. And okay, so Mark, you've shared your opinions on Twilight with us, so I thank you for that because I know it's a hard thing to do. I
made me relive it.
I don't need you to give a rating on this if you don't have to.
No, I won't.
I do. But yeah, so that's going to do it for this kind of segment, this extended segment of the of this week's episode. So, Mark, where can people find more of your work?
So you can find more of my work on my personal blog at fastfilmreviews.wordpress.com, and you can also follow me on Twitter at @Mark_Hoban.
All right, great. And yeah, thank you, Mark, for joining us this week. And
yeah, thanks for having me.
For sure. And, you know, I'm sure we'll have you back soon enough. So talk to you later, I guess.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Thanks, Mark.
And that ends part one. Please flip your tape over to side B.